Right, but the theme of this talk is hearts and marriage and dealing with hearts and marriage. So I'm going to say a few words about that and how we might deal with these things. First of all, I wrote a wee book on the theme of coping with heart feelings called Either a Crystal Vase or a Rubber Ball. So if you haven't got a copy of it, you should get 6 copies for €10 for all your friends. So that's kind of starting with the commercial. Okay. Well, the theme of that book, Either Crystal Vase or Rubber Ball, is really about how we deal with hearts in any kind of relationship. And what is it that hurts us? What is it that kind of makes us hurt, feel hurt? You know? And to a large extent, it is the way we see ourselves. What makes us feel hurt is the way we see ourselves. There are some people and they are very easily hurt, and there are other people and they kind of have the height of a rhinoceros. So, I think I'd be along that line too. They don't get hurt very easily, whereas others, as they do. And a lot of it is to do with how we perceive ourselves. I remember one time reading about I met two children, two young people, who had done the junior cert, and one of them had barely scraped the pass. And she was delighted with her results. And the other one had got 5 or 6 A's and a B and was desperately disappointed. Why did she not get an A? So what was the difference? Why was one kind of so happy and the other so sad? Basically, it was because of expectations. And so our expectations have an awful lot to do with how we feel and how we react to things. And a lot of it is to do with managing our expectations, not setting them too low and not setting them too high, but still setting them that we have to reach for them. Whenever I'm doing a wedding, one of the things I always say to the couple, the young couple, in the homily, whenever you win an argument, you lose. When you're at home and you have an argument over something or other, whenever you win, you lose. And if you remember that, it'll kind of ease a lot of the problems for you. Because most of our arguments are over things that don't matter. You know, what are we going to watch on TV? And I want to watch Fair City or Coronation Street or whatever it is, and the other wants to watch the football match. And so we have this argument as to what we're going to watch. And in fact, it doesn't really matter who, because both of them are rubbish. But what happens is it turns into a power struggle. So it's not so much over what I'm going to watch, it's who is going to win. who's going to win this thing? And if I kind of win, then I've kind of a victory over the other person. If I lose, I feel that the other person has had a victory over me. Now, whenever we have a victory over the other person, what happens is that the other person feels hurt, and the other person feels a little bit alienated from us and kind of withdraws from us a little bit. And if we do that over a period of time, then the other person is withdrawing further and further away from us. So here we are winning all our arguments and losing the unity and the love of our spouse, or whoever it might be. It may be a child, it may be a sister, a brother, whatever. So, as I said, I think that it's not worth, most of the time it's not worth. Sometimes things are worth fighting over, you know, but most of the time they're not worth fighting over. And if we can kind of step back and say, okay, I'm not going to fight over this. And that's not the same as saying that I'm going to let somebody walk over me. That's a different kind of a thing. But it's realizing what is important and what's not important. So that would be one thing. Another thing I would say is a lot of the time it's it's going out of my head for a moment, but I'll come back. This thing of how we see ourselves. What makes us fragile? And there can be all kinds of history there in a person's life that makes us kind of hypersensitive to either particular words or to a particular accent or whatever. The question is, you can ask yourself, each one of us should ask ourselves, am I a crystal vase or a rubber ball? I don't know how you would answer that. Well, you hear people saying, I'm shattered by what happened. You know, I'm cracking up under pressure. I'm in bits after what happened to me. Okay? I'm feeling really broken. What we're talking about here is the crystal vase. The crystal vase has an idea, I am very precious and I'm very open to being hurt or whatever it is. And so I'm kind of, because I feel that kind of vulnerable, I cover it up in all kinds of ways. I kind of become defensive. I become shy. I become afraid to do things. I become afraid to meet people or whatever it might be. That we are protecting ourselves because we feel that we will break easily. Whereas the rubber ball, says, well, you know, not all that precious. Good quality rubber, but can it, you buy it for 50 cents, you know? I'm not all that precious. So, you know, if you drop me on the ground, I don't shatter, I don't break, I bounce. See? And if you throw me up against the wall, I bounce back. And if you put a steamroller over me, I may feel pretty crushed, but once it passes over, I bounce again. Okay. And it can say that because it doesn't think it is a crystal vase. It can say that because it says, I am a rubber ball, I can take it. The motto of the rubber ball is, I can take it. The motto of the crystal vase is, I am shattered. Now, there's the touch of the crystal vase in every one of us. But what we should be trying to do, I think, is to move from being predominantly crystal vase to being rubber ball. And that means kind of over and over again, kind of whenever I think I'm crystal vase, I kind of decide, wait a minute, tap on, snap out of it, I am a rubber ball. Now, the rubber ball doesn't belittle the quality of the rubber. Now, if it's good quality rubber, it's good quality rubber, and the better the quality rubber, the more bounce there is. So it's not a question of saying, I've no value at all, but it's a question of saying that, you know, I can take it. That's the principle of the rubber ball. And so that would be trying to move from one to the other. Now, the question, why can I think that I am a rubber ball? Why do I not have to feel that I am a crystal vase? Because my sense of who I am, my sense of my worth, where is it coming from? Is it coming from how other people treat me? What other people say about me? Is it coming from my successes? Or my children's successes? Are my children's failures? Or is it coming from something deeper? And people talk about self-esteem. That we, you know, we should have self-esteem and we should build up children's self-esteem. And you do that by a kind of being positive with them, giving them positive feedback, and so on, you know. I'm not keen on that kind of a thing, on the idea of self-esteem, because usually self-esteem is dependent on something that is too flimsy. In the sense that my child kind of does the leaving cert, for example, and I'm so proud of the child having done the leaving cert, and my self-esteem is way up. And then kind of the child goes to college and maybe fails first year or kind of gets involved in some kind of trouble or whatever. And, you know, so now my self-esteem is way down again, or maybe being moving even faster than that, between what builds up my self-esteem and what doesn't build up my self-esteem. So where do we root our sense of who we are? We root it in the fact that we are God's children. That I am a child of God. Now we say that so easily, that we forget what an outrageous thing it is to say. We say the Our Father who art in heaven, and we say it without even thinking, what the hell am I saying? Who do I think I am to be calling God my Father? That's why I love the introduction to the Our Father that we now have at Mass, at the Saviour's command, informed by divine teaching, we dare to say it. The thing there is, we dare to say, our demos teacher, audacity. We have the audacity to say, God is my Father, to call God my Father. This is such a brazen, outrageous thing to say. And why do we say it? Because it would be worse, it would be more outrageous if we didn't say it. Because the Lord has said, the Lord has told us. So here we are in this kind of a bind. It's outrageous to say that I am a child of God, but it's more outrageous to disobey what the Lord has told me. So that is why we have the audacity to say, Our Father. Now, why is that such an audacious thing to say? Such a brazen neck needed for such a thing. Well, I was saying to somebody, you know, if a cat has an offspring, it's a little cat, it's a kitten. If a goat has an offspring, it's a kid. Dr. Fowler, he tried it at. Goats forget goats. You don't get lambs from goats. And if a human being has an offspring, then it's a little human being. And if God has an offspring, then it's a little God or a little goddess. So, when we say that God is my Father, what I'm saying is, I'm a little God or a little goddess. Okay? Now, what does that mean to be a little God or goddess? In the early church, in the early church, one of the first things that the early fathers talked about was divinization. And this is still very strong in the Eastern Church. Divinization. Being made divine. Or they use the word sharing the divine nature. Now, nature is what makes a thing what it is. It is kind of a chair's nature that makes that a chair. Okay? It is human nature that makes you a human being. It's a tree's nature that makes it a tree. Yeah. If we share the divine nature, then we are being made divine. And can you see all of this at the level of words? How do we actually get into our imagination? Well, if you take it that, if you take a stone statue, or a wax statue, you know, you go to Madame Tussauds or something, and you go in and you see this wax statue, and it is so lifelike, you know, it looks like Princess Diana or Meghan Markle or whatever it is, who's there now, whatever, and it is so lifelike that you would think it was alive instead it's only a lump of wax. But somebody comes along and breathes on it, and this lump of wax comes alive. Only happens in the movies, but anyway, this lump of wax comes alive. Now, the difference between lump of wax and human being, that change from wax to human being, is trivial compared to the change that happens in us. When God comes along and takes a human being and breathes into us, and breathes his spirit into us, and makes us a child of God, we are lifted way above the human. So we are no longer human beings. We are children of God. Our humanity has been incorporated or elevated into the dignity of being a child of God. When I'm giving a retreat to young people, I try and explain this to them. And then I tell them, when you go home, you tell your mom and your dad that you are a little goddess or a little god, and you expect to be treated like a little goddess. You expect to be treated like a little god or a little goddess. And I said, if your mommy and your daddy are wise, they will say, and we expect you to act like a little goddess. That's what it's all about. Now, if I have a strong sense of being a child of God, if that, and it takes a long while to build that up and to deepen our appreciation that we are children of God. But if I have a strong sense that I am a child of God, then what the heck does anything else matter? I don't care whether people next door are now driving around in a Porsche while I'm driving around in a 1996 Ford Fiesta, if they had them at that stage. Doesn't matter. I don't care if people say you're kind of a great guy or you're a pain in the neck. It doesn't matter. Because I know I am a child of God. And everything else is only a little bit of froth on the pint. And once I have that, then it doesn't matter what other people may say to me or say about me or whatever. And indeed, you know, most of the time when other people say things about us, it reflects more where they are at rather than where I am at. You know? That just as when we say things, it reflects more where I am at than where the other person is at. You know, one stage kind of, you may have a person that kind of slurps their tea, for example. And kind of, if I'm in good form, doesn't matter who to me, I don't even hear it. If I'm in bad form, I think that yolk is kind of slurping again. But it's I'm the one that has changed, not the other person, you know? So it's kind of, and if I can realize that it's the same when other people kind of, you know, come in bad form, the husband is out working or the wife is out working, and he comes in and is in bad form and is kind of snapping at everybody, and, you know, well, you need me taking it out of me. Yeah. But I mean, just decide, what the heck, can we get over it or she get over it? And kind of carry on. So, I don't know, I kind of just going to, anybody like to ask any questions or whatever?
I think it's wonderful what you said, Father. It's very difficult to put it into practice.
It is, yeah. Well, I'm saying you get plenty of practice, so if you keep, trying.
Or if you're a rubber ball for many years.
Yes.
You know, and all of a sudden you think, hey, I'm just tired of being kicked around.
Yeah. Well, as I say, there's a difference between letting yourself be kicked around and kind of realizing you're a rubber ball. I mean, there comes I mean, there's no way that anybody should just let themselves be kicked around. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no way.
I don't mean physically.
Oh, I know. Yes. But there are ways of kind of dealing with situations. You know, I have a story. I don't know how true it is, of a man, and he would come home drunk at night, you know, and be very violent with his wife. And this was going on for some time. Okay? So anyway, he came home one night and he was beat her up, whatever, and then he fell asleep. And she got his shoe, and she walloped him on the forehead with his shoe. And he woke up and kind of beat her again. And then he came in the next night, and he beat her up. And when he went to sleep, she got the shoe, and walloped him again, and the head. So after that, when he came home, he would shout and roar, but he didn't touch her. Okay? That's true or not, but it's kind of, you know, we have ways of stopping kind of things, or trying to find ways of stopping kind of things.
I can relate to the part when you said, you know, if you come home tired, and everything gets you in there. Every so often, I come home really tired, you know, my eyes are tired.
Yeah.
And everything my husband does, if, you know, if there's something left on the table that should be somewhere else, everything gets on my nerves.
Yeah.
You know, that normally I wouldn't, and I'd be inclined to be very snappy.
Yes.
You know. So
I had a friend one time, and she used to tell me about the husband that he was so laid back, he was horizontal. And she would come in and she would be in a fierce form, giving out about everything, giving out about him and the whole thing. And he would just sit there and he would let her kind of say the whole thing. And then he would say to her, "Now, Karen, go back to your knitting." And that just kind of sent him way up again.
Some of my lads, my sons, sometimes they'd be down, and I'd come in. That shouldn't be there. Said, you know, the place was grand before you come in. Yeah. Nobody was bothered.
Yeah, exactly. And it's become grand and you're gone. Yeah. So that's what I say, you know, some things are important and other things are not important.
My husband said to me recently, going to two of our kids, keep your faith to yourself, we don't want to know. You can go to your retreats, you can go wherever you want, but we don't want to know, it's your business. Now, I was very hurt because I said, it's not just my faith, it's your faith as well, we're all brought up in the Catholic faith. And then I decided, well, if that's the way we want to go, I just want to keep quiet about where I'm going. But I'm just wondering, what's the best way to deal with that? Because there's a different stage, you know, they just...
What age are the children?
Well, the two that he said in front of was 24 and 18.
Right.
You know, and I was quite hurt because, you know, he goes to Mass and he's a good man, but I would go to Mass every day, or sometimes I might get to Mass twice a day, and I'd go to confession very regularly, and he'd say, "Oh, for God's sake, you're for the birds, you're destroying this family with your faith," you know, and I just thought, God, where is this coming out of, you know?
Right.
But I just think don't know and say nothing, but I don't know what's the best approach.
Okay, well, as you say, where is this coming out of? That's the first thing to establish. You know, am I doing something that is, you know, kind of causing problems? That would be the first thing. Yeah. Or is the other person kind of going through something, you know, whatever it might be. So it's trying to establish as far as possible where it's coming out of. And then if you think that it's unfair, maybe just kind of to say it, you know, I think that was unfair, or something like that. Some people would say, you know, kind of to say how you feel, and kind of in a way there's something about that, but the same time if a person has acted unjustly, I mean, that needs to be pointed out too.
Yeah, I think a big part of that as well is that you shouldn't be speaking to in your marriage in front of your children about the conflict.
Yeah,
I think it's important for married couple to keep their conflict
in front
of the children.
Yes.
With their lives, so there's no bias being taken.
And
perhaps, I mean, maybe may feel, is it possible that he may feel that he's been, that he's missing out, that you're giving too much attention, you know, to something, and he's been neglected, or he's not getting the attention in some way. And so you have to make sure that you fulfill your roles.
Yes,
well, I do
fulfill my roles, and I go to mass quietly, but you know I had gone, and then, but as I say, I think it's more of a stage of where he's at.
Right, yes.
I had a situation recently where I started a course just after Christmas. It's actually a course in horticulture, what is worth it. The course doesn't matter, but I started it 4 years ago, but I had to give it up at the time because we were moving house. And the tutor, on the second morning, I knew I was in trouble because he picked on me, and I said it consistently to him. I had a brother who's a retired priest. He said, "No, your time to witness." I thought, bloody hell, it doesn't feel very comfortable. I'm going there to learn this stuff. And we as at my knees, we were up, you know, doing the reading, attending to the beds, and he says, "I'm going to reduce your marks." And I said, I'm praying for you. And then he said to the Arctic store, "Cheating Simon on my last cause." I said, "No, I didn't. I just said I'm praying for you." Anyway, I just cut the cheese. He just has a gripe about women, about religion. He's obviously got a lot of importance, like, but this is the way it comes out. You know, it's been a very uncomfortable course. I'm still doing it. I went for counselling around Easter time, and I stayed out there for 3 weeks, and then I went back. I thought, I decided to do this course, I paid my fees, you know, and if this guy's an issue, but he's very good at what he does. But I'm not imagining, and others know it too, but I've processed the hurt now. It doesn't hurt me, you know. But I mean, at the beginning, it was the shock of it, you know, the shock of it.
Yeah.
Horrendous. I couldn't believe he was picking on me. I thought, what on earth am I looking to do with this now? You know, but I mean, there's exams at Christmas now, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do? So I pray every day before I go in, and at every consultation, I pray for him, things like that.
Right.
But I'm still a dunce at the top, I'm not very good at it. But anyway, I just thought I'd share that.
Right.
I'm thinking like there's a lot of hurt or something.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
I'd like to know what he knows, I want to learn the stuff, you see.
Yeah.
I'm probably the only one praying for him, too.
Mm. I didn't set up that intention, I can tell you, I'm not missing it.
I
have to excuse myself, I can't keep up with enough of the Irish accents.
I suppose the other thing, I'm here to finish our sentence. One of the things that let's say in a case like that now, what can you do? And I don't know what you can do, I mean, so I'm not going to attempt. But I think of it in terms of, you know, the count wheels. And if I want to stop this wheel, if I want to slow down this wheel, who's the other person, if I want to slow down that wheel or speed it up, then either on this cog wheel, if I move faster, then the other thing has to move to keep up with me. If I move slower, what I'm saying is if I change, the other person has to change. It's kind of people know your pattern, people realize your pattern, and they know how to, but if you change your pattern,
mm-hmm.
You know, the husband comes in, he's due in for dinner at 6 o'clock or something like that, and you have the dinner ready every time you come, every day, and he doesn't arrive in to 6:30. For whatever reason, good or bad, doesn't arrive in to 6:30. And you've said to him a million times, look, if you're going to be late, just phone me and kind of tell me you're going to be late and I won't put it on. He doesn't do it. So what can you do? Well, he arrives in one day and you have a note on the table. Your dinner is in the fridge. The pan is there. You know, or even better, your dinner is down in Diddles. Now, he soon get the message. Yes. So what has happened is you have changed your behavior. You haven't told him to do anything. You have changed your behavior. And he now kind of realizes, right, but if I come home tomorrow and it's done in Diddles again, you know. So maybe it's easier just to phone and say I'd be late.
I was going to say, could you apply that? Like, let's say a work situation where you've got colleagues kind of bullying people or the group think. And you're working hard to try and cover for other people. You're a team player, you work with other people. Now, I'm not speaking about myself, but I know a person who suffers situation. But like, and they're a very good person, and they're a very good worker, you know, they're an asset to the company. But, you know, as far as if they change little things, the bully is not, it's immaterial to the bully, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or the group tick, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, yeah.
How does a person break free of that cycle?
Well, as I said,
3 minutes?
No.
Going in very fast.
30.
It's very hard to know, to say in the abstract, but the person, I think, has to sit down and kind of figure out what can I change that the other person kind of inevitably has to change. I mean, a simple thing is, if you have a boss that's shouting at you, you know, and you're kind of shouting back, seeing as those are this or red, or indeed a husband or wife that's shouting at you, you're shouting back, see? If you simply drop your voice and you start talking in a calm, soft voice, and this person is roaring away at you, and the person is, I'm an idiot. And so it changes in that way, you know. But it's kind of, it's each situation has to, you have to work out the particular thing that can be done. You know? Remember one time a guy told me about his father was a bus driver or something, and he came up to the green lights, you see, and the car ahead of him, they came up to the red lights, and the car ahead of him was stopped, and the lights turned green, and the car didn't move, and then the lights went back red again. So this guy got out of money and looked at the driver in the front and says, which shade of green are you waiting for? was kind of making the point without kind of going over the top.
But you were.
Anyway, I think we better leave it at that.